Welcome to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. I'm Tim Grady, and I'm here with my co-host, Lou Weiss, president of All Metals and Forge Group, manufacturer of open die forgings and seamless rolled rings for the metalworking industry, aerospace, defense. If you need machinery built, Lou's your source at steelforge.com. Joining us is Norbert Orr, who is our senior correspondent, who tracks the global purchasing managers index surveys across other parts of the world. We report with Tim Fiore on the PMI here in the US for manufacturing. Norbert looks at everything else. Norbert, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be with you as always.
And I might add that you were the committee chair at the ISM going back a millennium.
For 16 years, yeah.
Okay, so that only demonstrates further to your credibility. And thanks for being on the show.
Or at least my endurance.
That works also.
So Norbert, what's the flock of geese doing this month? How are they moving?
There's a good bit of movement, Tim. And almost all of it's positive. As you mentioned, you know, what I want to do is tie together the ISM reports on services and manufacturing and tie that together with what we see globally. Is it consistent with what's happening globally? And is it positive if it's happening globally? So we try to take that perspective to connect the dots between those lines from that. This month we had four countries that performed exceedingly well. Germany came in at 65.1. Now, Germany has lagged many of the other countries in coming back. And so it's finally just getting to where it's starting to peak. And so really that's a consistent theme among all of these indexes is, have they peaked yet? Last month we said, we think we're at a peak. Let's see if we are. I think what we see right now supports the idea that we've peaked. Now that doesn't necessarily mean a bad thing. When we've got the two ISM indexes just above 60, that's certainly a positive indication. It's not as strong as it has been when it's been closer to 65, but that's okay because things tend to level out. You first get the growth and then you level out and for a number of months or maybe even through the rest of a business cycle. And then you go on and you build from that. So what I would expect to see now is the ISM indexes are going to be more of a leveling phase, and they're leading most of the other countries involved. And so their index won't be as high, but they're actually leading in terms of the number of months of growth and so on from that. So that's an important part. Australia was in there too at 63.2. Australia is in a bind right now because of COVID. They've shut down everything again, and you can't get. I've got a brother-in-law who lives in Australia, and he was hoping to get to the States sometime in July or August, and that's not even on the table now to be able, you can't leave the country and you can't go into the country without going through quarantine. So, but they're getting some fairly good numbers out of their manufacturing sector, but it's not a large sector. It's not as meaningful to Australia as manufacturing is to the US or to Europe from that. We've got, I always like to note Texas manufacturing. You know, Texas is about the seventh or eighth largest economy in the world. And so I pay a lot of attention to that. And there is the Dallas Fed does a survey And that came in at 60.1. So strength coming back in Texas, that's also an indication the energy market is doing okay. We've done some things with in terms of changing the strategy on energy, but still there's a strong indicator out of the energy market. And then lastly, Brazil, which has struggled, and I know Lou is always interested in. Brazil came in at 56.4, which is the highest reading they've seen in quite some time. So
they probably had to pay somebody off to get that.
So almost all of these countries are either at a 20-year high or a record high.
So, wow. If Australia is in their situation, what's the rest of Asia look like?
Interestingly, there's the story out of Asia is the Japan, the two China surveys, South Korea, particularly the two China surveys are very slow. In the 51 range, and Japan was doing better, and now it's slowed down again. The Japanese have just not been able to do the right policies that would get them into a greater growth spurt and so on, and they're not interested in changing the way they do things, so it's difficult for that. The rest of Asia, if you include Singapore, Vietnam, those, they're doing a little better. The real winner out of Asia is once again Taiwan. As you know, I contend that Taiwan has the best survey of any country that uses this methodology. And they have consistently 400 responses. They get like a 95% response rate, which is almost unheard of. But the government is involved in the collection, and they seem to get responses out of the various companies that participate in it. So that's a positive. And Taiwan is right now, I think, close to 70 for their PMI. So it's doing well. There are a lot of issues with regard to Taiwan right now because of COVID, because of situation with China, that China has threatened that they're going to try to attempt to take Taiwan. I'm not sure that's a situation anybody is prepared, either the Chinese or the U.S. or the Taiwanese. I'm not sure anybody's really ready to deal with that issue because Taiwan has been a democracy for over 60 years. And for them to get pushed around by the Chinese, admittedly, the Chinese firepower would be so in excess, but that gives the indication that somebody wants to level the country, because turning their army loose on the Taiwanese would certainly be a disaster for them and the rest of the globe.
Norbert, sorry, Lou, I just want to ask Norbert one more question on Asia. To your recollection, has China ever reported a PMI below 50?
Yes. Yes, okay. They have. It was close. But they did report during the downturn because of COVID. They did report numbers below that, and I think they've had one or two other occasions. But your question really speaks to the variability of the data. And these are change indexes that we're talking about. That's the formal name. It's a diffusion index or a change index. And it's all about measuring change. And the China surveys show constantly very little change taking place, which makes me doubt how good the data is, because economies have more variability in them than they do, you know, from this. So we'll continue to follow the Chinese surveys, but I'm glad there's two of them, because they tend to validate each other, but because I know they aren't independent of each other.
Okay.
So you take an average of the two.
that's exactly what I do, though. Is I post both of them in Excel, and I look at it and say, okay, on average, this is where they are. And that may be a better reading, although it tends to have a smoothing effect when you do that. But it may be a better reading to look at. I do the same thing. You know, there is another U.S. survey that people refer to and so on. And survey, they do what they call a flash survey of about middle month. And that survey average out their number with the ISM number with the flash number. And there's only like a half a point variability between the whole thing. So it tells you that we're pretty solid on our expectation that the U.S. is going to be a positive going forward to the second half of the year.
I will tell you this, that I've been in manufacturing, you know, steel forgings for decades, and I've been following all of these different reports, and they're ultimately always right on the mark.
Yeah.
Only once did I see a major variance, and I forgot the reason for it. But otherwise, and one of the very good ones here in the United States is the machine tool order report.
Right.
And you know that gives manufacturers a view of what business is going to be in 3 to 6 months.
Right.
It's a precursor to what's coming. So right. I like watching that number.
Well, an economist would look at it from the standpoint of capital investment.
Mm-hmm.
That if you don't have capital investment, you don't get growth in the future.
Right.
From doing that, and that's certainly, machine tools are a great sign of capital investment going forward, and so it's the question right now is, should the government be making capital investments on our behalf, or should the private sector be making capital investments for the future? I'll let you answer that whenever.
Tim, you want to handle that one? Because I know your answer and my answer are not the same.
Yeah, I don't think in a free enterprise system, if that's what we want to be as a country, the government should not be making capital investments. If you want to switch systems to socialism or communism, then the government makes capital investments. But we all see how that turns out. Cuba's having a great time today.
Well, yeah, really. Actually, I'm in agreement with you. I agree that the market should be allowed to follow its own path without as much interruption with the federal government as possible. On many counts also, the federal government, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't know how to spend money.
No, they don't. They know how to waste it.
Yeah. Well, the history, in every business that I've been in three Fortune 250 companies, capital is the big discussion constantly, because you have to invest your capital wisely. And one of the companies I worked for was a private company, a privately held company, and the owner of that company did away with the capital budget. And everybody in the operating side of the business said, oh, you can't do away with the capital budget. We have to have capital. He said, I'm not doing away with capital. I'm just doing away with the budget. We've got enough money that we can fund any project that somebody can come up with that makes sense.
I like
the style. We don't need to budget that a year and a half in advance.
I like the style.
Well, as a business owner, you understand fully what the implication of that is and right. how powerful it could be to the business.
So, Norbert, speaking of the government, and they're watching and kind of at the moment poo-pooing inflation, not sure that's the right approach because inflation looks to be gaining steam. What's it likely to do?
Well, I think it's a problem. I was going through some old notes of mine, and I found an article that I wrote in 1983. And it's, the title of it was Developing a New Game Plan. And it was how buyers should deal with inflation, that if they have suppliers coming in and claiming higher costs, how they should deal with it. If they have supplier or customers coming in, how they should deal with them, and how we need to recognize that inflation doesn't do anybody a lot of good. Over the long haul, it's not really good for buyers. On the long haul, it's not really good for sellers. So controlling it is really, really the issue. And, you know, it really relates over into the energy side of things, right? That energy prices go up and so on. And, you know, when oil prices go up, I look at it as, again, back on this capital theme of it's a tax on growth. When energy, if you go out to go to work today and you have to fill up your tank and it costs you $10 more than it did last time, then you really aren't, you're really losing ground. Because you just hit lost $10 of disposable income that's going to be burned up in a combustion engine, and it's going to be a problem in terms of investments. You've got less to invest, and so on from that. So, anyway, that was the basis of the whole article, and one of the conclusions I came to was that. Inflation made forecasting much easier because you just forecasted that things were going to go up. And so budgeting and everything else all becomes easier because of that. And my concern, and I'd be interested in your comments, Lou, on that. I worry about wages. I don't worry too much about materials because markets level themselves out. You know, look at what's happening to aluminum finally, that it start finally getting a little bit of strength and so on from that. What doesn't level itself out is wages. Once you grant a wage increase to an employee, it's rare that you would ever go and try to take that back.
Oh, there's no taking it back.
And that was what I would expect the answer to be, Lou. And I think it's for so many. So that I think we've got a situation I don't want to take on.
By the way, that's the reason why you're hearing now when people are going back to work and or a company will offer a signing bonus, which is a one-time event, and it doesn't become part of your usual pay.
Right.
So they're not plugging in this higher wage level that you can never get rid of.
Right. Well, and that's at the business level, you know, that you see. But what scares me most is things like the teachers unions. They all got a year off with pay. And now they're going to want a raise when they go back to work.
And, right, Right. Who came up with that idea?
So now we've got this huge inflation from an education standpoint, and really no way of leveling that out. That will never be, I guarantee you, that will never be renegotiated to where they take that back out of the system.
That's very true.
That's an amazing.
So it's wages that scare me.
Well, what about energy costs? Since that's such a big component of manufacturing, Norbert, a year ago, Brent crude was at $48 a barrel. Today, it's at $72 a barrel. That's got to take a bite out of the cash flow of manufacturers all across the world.
Oh, like I said, it's a tax on growth. You get growth, and you're going to trade that for growth in the future, and it's a bad situation to be in. Most of the others, the other area, and again, the teachers would be the services area, but the services area in general comes back very slowly. But the wages and everything never are reversed, from doing that. So it's something to keep close watch on.
To your point, Tim, about the $72 gas price per barrel, that's actually about $12 over our sweet spot at All Metals and Forge Group. Because at $60 a barrel, they're wearing through parts at the pump, and they have to start making repairs and planning for refurbishing and so on. At $72 a barrel, I would say within the next 45 days, we're going to see an onslaught of repair parts on things that we've sold in the past. So bring on the $72 a barrel gas price. Think of the 80, you know.
Well,
it's very self-centered of me, but.
Sure. Well, no, that's understanding your business.
Yeah.
That's you understanding the drivers that change the future and in that case, probably positively.
Yeah.
To be able to hit that. I remember sitting in a meeting with some quote energy experts probably 10, 12 years ago, in which they said, we'll never see oil prices below $90 a barrel.
Yep.
I think they dropped the experts title.
Yes, over the years, and I've been consulting for 30 plus years, I never referred to myself as an expert, because there's always somebody smarter than me who's got a better answer than I do. And all I'm going to do is throw myself down a flight of stairs.
It's like a stick of dynamite. You're asking for a problem at some point in time.
Right.
Because if you use that expert terminology too often, it's not going to work all the time, and it's going to blow up on you.
Oh, absolutely, Lou. I agree.
Yeah.
So, Norbert, your chart, your scattergram that you put together shows economies as they expand and weaken, contract and strengthen, contract and weaken, which comes out of the surveys that you do, and any manufacturer can participate in that survey. And I encourage them to get a hold of Norbert or reach out to us, and we'll get you in contact with Norbert. And they get the full report, which is a whole lot more than we're talking about right here, Norbert. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And we keep enhancing it with small improvements and so on from that. But I think my history of being in business and so on is business owners, particularly smaller business owners and so on, are at the micro base, at the micro level, they don't take a broad enough look at the economy. I'm not trying to make economists out of them, but it's the things that, like Lou mentioned, that between this price point and this price point, we're going to see this part of the cycle. And I think that they just tend to stick their head in the sand and hope it turns out okay.
Why don't you give us your email address or website address so people can go to where you are?
Oh, that's a great idea. Thank you. My email is NORJORE, all small case, NORJORE at gmail.com. And I'll be glad to send a sample, share with you this past month's report and so on. And of course, if anybody signs up to participate and they decide that they don't want to, that's fine too. But it really helps if you give it a shot.
And the questions aren't particularly invasive.
No. Not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, it's fascinating how the survey is put together, and I encourage manufacturers listening to this show to get in touch with Norbert or Manufacturing Talk Radio. We'll get you connected, because there are actually two reports that get shared with you. A lot of great information, and you get one about mid-month, as we're talking about here, and one early in the month to give you some indicators of where the economy is going. So Norbert, as always, we appreciate you sharing with us that data and kind of explaining it to our manufacturers. We appreciate you being on the show.
My pleasure.
Thank you, Norbert. Have a good month.
Okay. You guys, same thing.
All right. Thank you much.
We will. And while you're surfing the web, go to jacketmediaco.com. Behind Lou, you see all of our podcast properties. So you can listen to any of those. I think if we add them all up together, over 1,000 episodes of podcasts that we have put together. So please check us out at jacketmediaco.com. And as always, thank you for listening to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. Bye, Lou.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.